Hey, Startup Hustle listeners, before we get into today's episode, I've got some exciting news to share. If you've enjoyed the insights and stories here at Startup Hustle, you're going to love what we have in store at our brand new podcast called Product Driven. I've always described myself as a product guy first, entrepreneur, software engineer, but really a product guy. I love building products. Many people struggle, though, with how to take a product idea and build a tech product, while software engineers struggle to understand the business side of things and they just don't see the big picture. My new podcast, Product Driven, is about that gap between business and the tech side of building software. It's designed for startup founders, tech leaders, software engineers, and anyone who loves tech and startups. Thank you for being part of this community. Enjoy this episode of Startup Hustle, and please subscribe to Product Driven in your podcast app, and you can also check it out on YouTube. Thank you so much.
And we're back for another episode of Startup Hustle, a podcast for entrepreneurs by entrepreneurs. If you want to start, own, or build a business, then you're in the right place. We bring you the real truth about what it's like to take something from concept to launch. From growth, innovation, experience, failing, or winning big, we've got you covered. So let's get down to business with another episode of Startup Hustle, brought to you by Fullscale.io. And we're back. Another episode of Startup Hustle. Matt DeCourcy here with Alex Cruz. He'll be sitting in for Matt Watson today. Now, before I get too far into this, I do because I often forget, today's episode of Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software development team quickly and affordably. But for those of you listening, I have got a problem right now. I've been promoting the podcast on all these different channels, all this different stuff. We've got this really high ranking on the Apple charts, and thank you so much for your support because of it. But with that, I've got this data problem. And so I figured that I would try to solve it. Now, why not reach out to our own people that we've identified that have great things going on? So I went back to the list of our St. Louis top startups, and I found PenPath, and I figured out that Alex Cruz is the guy to help me solve my problem. So Alex, welcome to Startup Hustle.
Matt, thank you so much for having me. Pleasure.
Yeah, and congrats again on making it onto the list for the top startups in your city. I was so pleasantly surprised to see so many cool people doing so many cool things in St. Louis, and like people that aren't from Kansas City don't normally know that most of it's in Missouri, not Kansas. So seeing a lot of cool stuff go on in the state of Missouri, that's a lot of fun. But let's go ahead and dive right in with you letting, well, tell me and everyone listening what your backstory is and what brought you to finding a problem worth solving with PenPath.
Yeah, no, definitely. It's so funny that right now you're seeing such a growth in terms of the data available for marketing professionals, where everybody's on their phone. Everything you do is somehow tracked one way or another. And, you know, whether, you know, you're a company using that data or not, people are quickly starting to realize that top players in the game are able to use that data to make better decisions that ultimately, you know, affect, you know, help them grow the business and improve their bottom line. So, I mean, honestly, that's really where I started PenPath, is a journey of, you know, starting my own publication in college, livingthecollegelife.com, to getting a corporate job, to understanding that all these marketers, you'd think that they really have their, you know, their stuff together. Are we allowed to cuss?
Yeah. Yeah. Fuck yeah. There you go. I'll pave the way for you, buddy.
There you go. You know, you think all these marketers really have their shit together when it comes to knowing everything that's going on, but they don't, man. And I've talked to companies that are making billions of dollars still using Excel and clunky reports. And so that's really what we're passionate about. We're trying to catch that wave and offer an actual solution to this problem.
Yeah. And for, you know, for, if you're listening, and I consider myself to be a marketing and sales guy at heart. So this, I love these kind of episodes. Some people don't consider, okay, so Facebook and Instagram are the same company, but they're not LinkedIn. They're not any of these other things. And they don't have a vested interest in helping you spend money on the other people's platforms. Now, as a salesperson, one of the first rules that you learn is you don't walk your customer to the competition's front door. So, you know, the struggle is real there. And then the thing is like some of these platforms have different like approaches. So I would imagine that, I mean, like you said, it's shocking to think about how much money goes out and how archaic some of the tracking methods are. Now, just so we're establishing a good base for the problem that we're solving, can you give everyone a little bit of insight about what the end result is from this problem? Like the financial implications or results or anything like that?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So we had a client increase their sales by 40% year over year by finding 2 to 3 insights in their data that were really game changers. And so, you know, for instance, this client sold products online, and they were, you know, if you were looking at their marketing spend and understood where their money was coming in, you would have never guessed that Bing was maybe a competitor or contender, I should say. We quickly identified that a lot of revenue was coming in from Bing organic. And so after shifting 15% of their budget into Bing, they saw immediate results. And if you dig into the data a little bit more, you would start to realize that their customers were older people. Older people may have Microsoft computers, hello, Bing default search engine, and they were missing this huge pile of money. And so the data allowed them to quickly, you know, innovate. And that's just the beginning. Once they got into that, there was obviously a lot more insights. But that's the power of data. A lot of people get, you know, their eyes can glaze over when you talk data. But when you start talking about 40% year over year growth in revenue, and this is an established company, this isn't a startup, you really start to raise some eyebrows.
So I often say that saving money is making money. I also am quoted often to saying cost per click advertising is like crack, because it gets you high really quickly and leaves you wanting more. That's not from firsthand experience, but that is like you can run through a lot of cash with CPC. It's a mystery, and the things are set up to not really teach you how to be good at it right away. Like Google wants you to spend more money. And there's things like, I know people that have purchased CPC ads for years and they didn't even know what a negative keyword was until I told them. And you know, they say that saving money is making money. So like if you can sell more and spend less, you're winning. And I'm assuming that that's a focal point of PenPath.
Yeah, it's so true. And unfortunately, there's so much facade. I mean, you think that something as basic as Google Analytics is something that, oh yeah, just set up Google Analytics. But the complexities of tools like that, you know, if you're a marketer right now, you might have it installed, but you know, are your events installed correctly? Is it linked with your Google Ads? And if it's not, you know, do that. And then of course it's not linked with Facebook. And so there's so many, you know, challenges. And it's, how reasonable is it for marketers that are barely trying to keep up with today's Facebook ads update to also keep up with, you know, how to gain value from their data? It's truly overwhelming.
So does PenPath, and for those of you listening, it's just like it sounds, PenPath.com. There's a link in the show notes. You know, I love it when you are interactive, because sometimes we can talk about a lot of crazy stuff. If you just click the link and visit the site, you're going to learn a lot of info there. But so does PenPath actually advise me on setting some things up, like goal tracking or anything like that? Or does it plug into existing stuff?
Yeah, so it's interesting, because when we started, you know, anybody who's starting a business, you have an initial idea of the problem you're going to solve. And when you start solving that problem, you start realizing, and there are other problems that you also have to solve. And so the way we really boil it down is we, you know, think of a three-way Venn diagram that overlap. And the three main things that PenPath delivers is, number one, development. So we have to develop a data warehouse. Where does all your data go? How do we connect to all these data sources? You don't want to worry about that if you're a marketer executive. So we develop that. The second part is technology. You know, if you're a startup, maybe you're trying to build everything from scratch, but really what we did is we partnered with the best professional grade tools on the market. So if any data guys out there might be familiar with tools like Tableau or Looker, you know, et cetera, Data Studio. So we partnered with literally the premium tools on the market and integrated them to work together. And then the third, so number one is, again, development. Number two, technology. And the third is guidance. So it's like, yeah, there's dev shops that can certainly help you when it comes to data science and development. But we're just a little, we don't offer everything. We just offer development for the marketing and sales vertical. And so when it comes to developing or guidance on how, what data warehouse to use, you know, how you're going to visualize your data, how to build better reports, that's really where we focus our consulting and guidance. And so when you put all those three together, it kind of gives us a special sauce on our overall solution.
You hit a very important thing that I want to, you know, like a golden rule kind of point. First off, okay, so if you're thinking about building something, you always go see what's out there. So you mentioned Tableau. Tableau is a platform that exists strictly to help you visualize data. And the thing is if it's in spreadsheets and all these other places, like how do you make this, like, how does this actually become real? You know, because when you see a pie chart, it can show you something way different than looking at a column of a spreadsheet. And too many people, especially when they're in that, like, trying to make an MVP thing, they try to reinvent the wheel. And, like, the thing is you're never going to be better at voice recognition than Amazon. Like, they're running Alexa, and, you know, like, so in some cases you're better to, like, partner and use that tech because your future partners are likely using it already. And the thing is like, I did that had to have certainly got you to a market ready and revenue generation stage way faster. Is that correct?
Way faster. No doubt. You know, and it's funny because I got lunch with a regional sales, or forget his exact title, sales guy from Tableau when he was in town. And, you know, we were just talking and he said, you know, it's funny, I have so many marketing companies actually come to us and want to use Tableau to visualize their data, and we turn them away. I said, what do you mean you turn them away? He said, they want to use this really cool tool to visualize their data, but they're missing so many pieces and they're not tech savvy enough. And I said, okay, that's a really telling piece of information. And so that's just the tip of the iceberg in terms of, you know, how we can really help and add to these tools that are already in market.
Yeah, and it's treacherous terrain trying to build everything yourself. You know, we've had many guests and myself that have laid the sentiment down. It's like, you got to pick one or two things at most and get good at them in the beginning and let other things support you. There's you know, now certain things that aren't going to be proprietary and stuff like that. And, you know, that's a different subject, like whether you should build it or utilize it. But it's like, for example, I'm also the founder of Gigabook, and Gigabook, like it's an online scheduling tool. Like, but if by integrating Google Calendar with Gigabook, we have created a bridge to, like, anything and everything. I'm not trying to compete against Google Calendar. Google Calendar just doesn't have a very sophisticated online widget or anything like that. And, you know, we never thought of it as like, hey, I got to take out Google. I'm competing with Google. Like, hell no. Like, how would we ever do that? And then everybody has a Google Calendar. So Think about where you can connect and then those things. Because if you don't, you're going to open your business and people, the first thing they're going to ask is, do you integrate with X? And with that coming up, was that early as you were creating your plan and getting ready to roll this out? Did you have, there's so many marketing tools and so many different things. How did you prioritize or figure out what, where, who, why, and all of it?
Yeah. So I just want to make a quick point before I address that. Another thing is interesting is that this isn't something that only small or mid-sized companies do. You know, we can talk about my story a little bit if you want, but I moved out of my parents' house when I was 27 so I could self-fund this. And so I wanted to preface the next fact, but I just bought my first kind of nice car, right? I got a BMW M340i, and it was a big milestone as an entrepreneur who's been trying to do this for 10 years. But what I learned is that even somebody like Toyota, they just came out with the new Supra, uses a BMW engine for their Supra because they have the BMW steering wheel. So I learned a lot about car. And so engineers and companies of all sizes, really have to utilize and leverage others in today's market, because that's how you're going to build the next thing is, and, you know, Amazon utilizes, you know, the US Postal Service. So, you know, you just got to be really smart and leverage others in your entrepreneur journey. But so your question was like, how did I find this sort of white space in a very busy and cluttered market?
Who'd you decide, like, cause you look, when you have an infinite amount of things to connect to, like you got to eat that elephant one bite at a time. Yeah. So obviously Google's the big ads, like most people are buying ads there, but you know, so like once you get past a few of the painfully obvious ones, how did you determine what and where and how to, you know, you mentioned that Venn diagram. Well, yeah. How did you determine the second and third circles?
So in terms of connecting to data sources, we were going for Facebook and Google ads in the beginning, and we tried to build those ourselves. And we went down, and that was a big mistake. We had to turn back, and then we said, wait a second, there are actually people, or there's actually companies right now that exist solely to build connections, and they don't visualize the data. So these are data pipeline companies. And so I hadn't mentioned that earlier, but like just like we partnered with visualization companies, we also partnered with data pipeline companies. And so these include companies like Improvado and Fivetran. Those are two partners of ours. Fivetran just raised like $40 million by Andreessen Horowitz. Improvado also raised a bunch of money by people like founders from like AdRoll, et cetera. So basically what we do is we're able to pull in hundreds of connections from these guys already. And we're already, you know, basically mixing both of their resources, essentially, you know, one of them has 100, the other one has 200 connections or whatever that is. And we get to pull all 300 or whatever into our offering. And so that's really kind of in terms of connecting, that's where we started or where we ended up.
I think that was also my point with Google Calendar. So like a really well-known connection hub is Zapier. Is it Zapier or Zapier or whatever, however you pronounce it. But for example, and they've been around for a while, but as we built Gigabook, that was the thing, like everybody we talked to, they were like, do you connect to something? I'm like, not only do we not connect to it, I've never even heard of it. And so those kind of tools anything you can do to not have to say no, that makes sense. Now, on the flip side, I didn't like Zapier too much because I don't like making someone subscribe to something to make my stuff work. So figure out where you can still bridge the gap there. But if they have something, because there's a thing, that's like $20 a month if you're paid. And if it can connect them to like four different things, that makes a lot of sense. And by the way, if you work for Zapier, thank you very much for 2 years in a row putting Gigabook in your top 10 booking and appointment sites.
That's awesome.
Get a hell of a lot of traffic from that, and I just want to say thanks. So
I was actually with those guys the weekend they founded it. I know the guys well. Out of Columbia. Yeah.
And that's a cool company. And like I said, that was a problem because you mentioned it from a development standpoint. So if you didn't have a tool like that, dude, there are literally so many things that any of our platforms could connect to. We could have like a team of like 40 people just building integrations. And then here's the thing. Then you have to maintain them and you have to manage them. And Google doesn't call you and tell you when they change something in their API. So it's definitely valuable. And those are the kind of early tools, like I said, that can get you connected to a lot of stuff. If you're trying to build that all yourself, especially early, you're burning time, you're burning resources. It doesn't make any sense. It's funny, as we say that, I literally just got a Slack notification for a new paying user on Gigabook. So maybe that came from from a Zapier referral. But yeah, and you know, that's the kind of stuff too, is like look and see who can help accelerate your partnership or your connections with stuff. So, all right, so we're discussing plans and things like that. Now, one thing that is certain when planning your startup is your projections and your plan will all be wrong. You will be right about some things and horribly wrong about others. I would love to hear something that you thought would go well or would do something that just like, where did it crater? And hopefully you look back at it now and you laugh, laugh a little bit, but give us an example.
I laugh and also worry that I'm probably in the middle of two other things that are completely wrong.
You never know until you know.
Exactly. No, I think our origin is just such an example of being wrong, or at least not. I wasn't the right person for that idea. So the reason PenPath has data in its the reason we have data in our genetic makeup, if you will, was because in 2014 we actually were a completely different company. We were sort of an IMDb for online content creators. And so essentially, if you were contributing to 5 blogs and you had a YouTube channel and you had your own website, you can paste the URLs of all this information and we would automatically pull in all your social impact, your link backs, all this data. And we started to build this and we had some early traction. But that was around the time where you guys may all be obviously familiar with the Cambridge Analytica. It was the Wild West in 2013-14, where you could actually ask these social networks for a lot of their open available data, or you could get firehose access, et cetera. And so we raised a little bit of money and from a couple of angel investors, and you started to see these companies be acquired or just shut down their firehose access. And, essentially we had to shut it down too, for those reasons. And so the big lesson there was like trying to boil the ocean or trying to get something that's such a, if you're not a developer yourself, which I wasn't, I was hiring developers, you shouldn't have something that's so development, based, at its foundation.
So what you're talking about is, basically trying to achieve data-driven growth. So first off, trying to drink out of a fire hose that's on is not possible. And at the same time, if it's not on at all, you're not going to get a drop of water, which I think was the point you were just making.
Yep.
So, and according to some, data is now the most valuable thing on the planet, which is kind of wild. So how do you help your users, clients, whomever, achieve data-driven growth without open access to every fire hose?
Yeah. So, I think everybody says, The Economist, I think, said that data is the new oil or whatever. And
right.
And I don't really believe that. I don't believe that it's necessarily the data that's really valuable. So I think of it like everybody has more oil than they know what to do with.
They did last month when they were paying you to take it,
exactly.
Yeah, which is weird. Yeah.
Because there's too much of it, right? Oil is only great if there's very little and everybody needs it, but everybody has more data than they know what to do with. So I believe that, companies like ours can be seen as like the refinery that turns that oil into gasoline. And so, in terms of why we do what we do is we work with all the data that you have as a company internally. So if you're a marketer and you're spending $25,000, $100,000, $1 million, I mean, it doesn't matter how much you're spending, but if you're spending a significant chunk of change every month, these tools that you spend it through have that data, and that should be your data. You're spending it on their platforms. And so that really shifted our understanding from, hey, there's a lot of data out there versus there's a lot of data you already own and you don't even understand that. So don't even worry about the data that's out there. And then from there, refining that data into something that's usable, into information that you can understand.
So you guys are using quite a bit of data analysis, automation, AI, machine learning. And, we don't have to get too nerdy with that, but the reason that you're seeing this huge uptick and funding pour into companies like this is because exactly like Alex mentioned, the amount of data can be overwhelming and it's very difficult to, so humans are biased. Our own opinions affect our perceived outcome or predictions. And sometimes it's like, I love optimistic people, but they can look at data. We're really trending up. And the thing is the machines are not, they are zeros and ones. And also there's literally so much information in some cases. I just completed a little research project on data science, and like the amount of data that is required to be kept by cell phone companies literally takes up server farms.
Jeez.
And so the thing is what do you do with that data and how do you look through it? It is completely impossible for people to get into it. So like, what's your approach at that? Like, how do you figure any of that out and like what's important and what isn't?
Yeah. So we were initially thinking, oh my gosh, so if we're going to build these incredible dashboards that bring it all together, people are going to see that and then right away see opportunity. And then we made a big mistake because we didn't realize that different people are different, you know, can read data differently. Some people can see it and right away they see insights, and other people, maybe, you know, more creative people or executives, they just get lost and they're like, it's too much, man. And it's like, really? It's a few things. It's too much for you already. And so we had to really, that's kind of where the art comes in, is building certain foundations of how you present that information, that data, in a way that's understandable, that's actionable, that's insightful. And that's, you know, that's something that we're still, you know, continuing to push the boundaries on. But, ultimately it comes down to understanding, you know, what are your main KPIs? And then what are the metrics that influence those, that you can access, right? Now, then you get into like, hey, you know, maybe I don't have access to those. Okay, well, what are the next best ones that you can use to truly build the story around how you're growing and how you're really performing? And, it does get into data science, into attribution modeling, into, forecasting. And there's a lot of complexity into making, you know, that data useful and informative.
Yeah. And that's the whole thing is it becomes really overwhelming fast. Like, even if you're just a small to medium sized company, like, I mean, there's a lot. Now, so something people have said to me so many times when I talk to them about CPC, cost per click advertising, they're saying, I tried it and it didn't work. And I say, did you get clicks? And they're like, yeah, but no one bought anything. I was like, that's not the click's fault. The job of CPC is to deliver clicks and traffic. Now, what you do with it on the other side of that, that's on you. Like, and let's assume that you are just mildly coming close to an appropriate target audience. Now, a lot of people aren't. And I'll give you an example. We were talking about failure a minute ago. So when we first started advertising for Gigabook, I'm not sure why that's such a hot topic today, but we would have a looking for terms like appointment software. We hadn't really discovered the negative keywords yet. So we would find that a lot of people were finding us because they wanted to make an appointment at the DMV.
Yep.
They'd be like online appointment scheduling.
Right.
And then it would say Baltimore DMV, and we would show up and we were burning like a lot of money. And I very quickly learned about negatives. But the thing was, is so those weren't the right clicks, but the people that were, that's CPC's job, is to drive traffic. Now, and I don't know if you do or not, do you do anything to help a user figure out what to do with it after the click occurs?
Well, we really like to draw a very clear line between we can build the reports that you need and tell a story with your data, but ultimately it's up to you to maybe hire a company to develop your website, to improve your app, and maybe use that data to support that. But outside of you seeing your top 10 or whatever metric insight you want, your top performing X, and why, you know, maybe the behavioral data that we have, right? So, you know, look at your website, you know, what are your landing pages? What's the data behind those? What are people behaving and converting? Like, that's really what we try to like outline in our analysis for our clients.
Yeah. Now, you've mentioned working with your clients. Do you have a consultative service or department? Is that part of it? Or is it more like their success is yours as well?
It is. It's a lot more. So we're sort of, if you're out there thinking about, you know, doing this, there's a lot of companies that already do, you know, standard reporting and connect to a bunch of data sources. And these are a lot of times more affordable. So, you know, these include companies like Dasheroo or TapClix. These are big players in the market. But if you're a company and you're spending a good chunk of money every month, we say usually at a minimum of I don't know, anywhere from 15 to 25,000 a month minimum, you start needing something a little bit more premium. And that's where we really come in. These other companies just cannot touch our data capabilities and data modeling. And so, you know, in terms of, you know, how we help and consult, a lot of it happens upfront, training our clients to be more data driven, doing helping them set up a measurement strategy. And then we should set up great dashboards and automated reports so that it's more so like a once a month touch base with our clients and make sure that they're utilizing the technology in the best way possible. But they'll always want more. Like they'll, you know, a good client for us is like, oh my gosh, like this is so insightful. Hey, can you guys pull this? Can I see this? Can I see demographics across, you know, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and Google all in one demographic dashboard? And that's where like, yeah, we develop that for our clients and they just keep getting, you know, better and better and more data driven over time.
By the way, I invented a word for what you just described. It's called democation.
Okay.
And if you can demonstrate and educate at the same time in anywhere in your platform, you're really winning because it's a two for one and it makes a lot of sense. And like, I think a lot of people and once again, like Gigabook getting a lot of love today, because it's a fully customizable platform, it was a strength and a weakness. So we really quickly realized that we had a lot of capability, but the assumption that anyone would find it, would even look for it, or knew that it was possible was dumb. So we put just like a simple explainer video. Like there's just a little icon. It looks like an old camera with a question mark on it. You click it and it pops open a video. There's no intro. There's no outro. It gets right down to business and shows you what that page does. And so that's demonstrating and educating, democation. I think I invented the word. I'm not sure. I've been claiming I have for a while.
I haven't heard it yet. So
yeah. So, but I think it really makes a lot of sense because, you know, a successful user is probably a longer term user. Now you're talking about things with data science, massive amounts of data. And that's why that's probably important because it can feel really overwhelming to a lot of people, even seasoned marketers. I'm a seasoned marketer and some stuff I'm like, dude, like, I'm trying to accomplish two things here, not 6,000. So, you know, quick question, kind of off track. At any point, did you have to go back and completely revise your new user or client onboarding flow?
All the time, man. I mean, it is a never ending and completely dynamic process for us.
Yeah. And that's something I'm so adamant about that. Like if you're building software, start with that. Cause don't assume anyone's going to care enough to figure out how to set it up on the way in. Like, so, you know, Gigabook has a thing called, we call it Smart Start. Yep. We ask you five questions at the beginning. And from those five questions, we can very easily and very intelligently determine what you need to set up on the way in. Yep. I was very paranoid at first and we won't let you in without filling it out. Cause once we looked at our own data, we realized that 0% of people that skipped the Smart Start process were converting. And that's because it's like, you know, you get someone in and they look at an empty dashboard, an empty calendar. And the way that's set up is about taking service bookings, but where do you enter a service or set that up? And you know, but I really think that the future unicorn startups and platforms just are going to be amazing at onboarding. The ones that exist now already are too. Like how quick and easy is it to set up a Twitter account and make a tweet? That's a great example. So
it is.
Okay. I like what you guys are doing here. And this is, I mean, definitely a problem we're solving. Now, when it comes to data science and machine learning, I think that both are quite misunderstood. What are a couple of things that you've learned about either that we'll put on a blue collar level, not data science or developers, but for the not as smart as those guys, people like me, like what's a couple of things you figured out or learned?
Yeah. So it's interesting because like you think of all these, you know, and anytime anybody, you know, tells you or gives you these terms, always try to dig in a little bit into the application. How are they actually using it? How much information is whatever data science fancy widget taking in to actually learn? So really what we started to understand, or my journey in understanding, you know, the application of something like a, like machine learning or data science, was that you have to really train whatever model you're using. And there are already great open source technologies that allow people to feed it information and it spits out maybe a prediction. And so one thing that I learned is I stopped calling it prediction. I started now calling it forecasting, or where is it trending towards? And that really removes the stigma of ever being able to predict, you know, at least where we're at as a company, where your marketing's going. But now we can actually start looking forward into where's our revenue headed? Where's our return on ad spend headed? That's been key for us. And we're now, you know, like I said, we don't say we're forecasting you're going to make $1 million. We're saying that's where you're trending based on a lot of really, really good insights using machine learning.
So, you know, one of the things I mentioned, I kind of did my own junior level data science and machine learning. Some of it was just honestly to be able to have intelligent conversations with some of our clients. And yet, so fullscale.io, that's the other business that I own with the other Matt who isn't here today. We employ a bunch of data science and machine learning people. Like, here's the thing, they're hard to find because it's still relatively new technology. So I was like, what am I even looking for here? A running joke at the Full Scale office was after going to TechCrunch last fall was everything with our new machine learning algorithm, like everything had machine learning in it. And it's obvious, honestly, overcomplicated. Like it can just be as simple as looking, like you mentioned, looking at trends. Keep it simple. Like you can build your own kind of stuff very quickly or easily by determining what should outrank others. I'll give you an example. At Full Scale, we know that companies with 10 to 100 employees are in our strike zone. We know if you have a chief technology officer, like we found that at some point, that you likely are a potential client because you don't have a CTO if you don't do tech. And just some simple things like that, where we were able to rank certain things higher and certain things low, because there's a world of data out there. I mean, you can go to like a lot of sites and buy an unlimited amount of data, but what you do with it's the hard part. So right. You can create some basic stuff. And then we incorporated some of that like back into Gigabook, like making your user experience better. So rule one for me when building anything is this annoying? If the answer is yes, or even maybe you have work to do. So an example, like in Gigabook, as it learns as you go, and it will, because I don't want to make you drop down your list of services and always have to go down to S. Because your service that starts with S, it just happens to be, you know, alpha sorted. Yeah. So if that's your most popular one, after about a week, it just starts to be the, like, that's the choice. And
exactly.
And those are the little goofy things that they sound goofy and they might not sound important, but that makes a user experience remarkably better. Yep. Do you guys do anything like that to just kind of like shorten the path to a result?
I mean, it just has to be. What we've noticed is that people were so, you give them all the information of how they're doing, how they're, you know, the results they're getting. Hey, your revenue's growing or grew last year by whatever percentage or whatever amount. And it's just more so, where are you going this year? And now you can go to your investors. Now you can go to your team and say, here's where we're going. And it's like looking forward with the information, not looking backwards. And I think that's just the key of applying things like data science and machine learning, is keeping it simple, like you said, and making it usable. And so that's really where our focus is. And I think so many companies try to make that like, it's a feature. It's not like our data science capabilities are features of the overall solution. It's not, you know, we're not betting everything on that. So.
Well, you know, people buy benefits, not features. And I say that a lot. Like, and too many people they want to sit there and try to sell the features.
Right.
Cut to the chase, man. They buy the benefits. So like features advantages benefits. If you ever find yourself talking about a feature, you need to follow that by describing your advantages over anything else and the benefit of what you're providing. So with that, what's an advantage that PenPath, and once again, go to penpath.com and check them out. What's an advantage that you have or a benefit that you have that outclasses your competition?
So our benefit's just really to provide clarity in a busy world in terms of how to maximize your budget and time. and how to increase your budget that you're getting as a marketer. You know, ultimately you need budget. Ultimately you need to perform better, and having our clients reduce the amount of time that they have to sift through all this data and saving you time and making you better and making your life easier as a marketer who's overwhelmed is such a benefit for us. And, you know, that's really kind of as the benefit relates to your job, making your life easier. And then the benefit for the company is you're minimizing wasteful spending and maximizing your return on investment. And right now, with so many options, everybody's, you know, there's nobody that's saying, man, I'm in marketing or I'm in tech and I have so much time on my plate. Your baseline is you're too busy to do anything. And so using great calendar tools like yours or outsourcing their development if they need an app or a website, or using marketing intelligence companies, it's just so much, it just makes, you know, your company more successful at the end of the day. And so, you know, really figuring out what those benefits are, if there's any other entrepreneurs or business leaders out there, is something that takes surprisingly a lot of work. You know, you'd think, oh yeah, well, benefits, let me just spit these out. But we've spent hours trying to synthesize, you know, how you're helping people and how you're helping their business. And so that's really what, you know, a few of the benefits that we offer.
You had a couple that I want to highlight, because I think when you start thinking about features, advantages, and benefits, by the way, FAB, F-A-B, easy to remember that. You hit a couple. Okay. Saving time. Mm-hmm. Is a big one. And then peace of mind. Yep. You will find that people will value those two over and above whatever else you're building.
So true. Because
you're like, oh, I want to make people help them sell more. I want to help them spend more. Okay, those are cool. But yeah. Peace of mind and saving time do that as well. But you can't put a price on peace of mind.
Right.
And that's like something I grossly underestimated building Gigabook was – the feedback, I thought people would be happy to have a more efficient online experience. They're like, you unchained us from our business.
Yeah.
Because like they were getting calls at 1 a.m. and blah, blah, blah. Well, guess what? The internet never closes. You can take bookings online and do a lot of different stuff and put yourself back in a position of not being your own admin or stuff like that. And a lot, you know, most businesses are one person. Like we think of businesses in the US as being big, the over, like in the 90% range are literally like sole proprietor, maybe a second person at best. So when you can give someone that time back, and my friend Blake Miller, the founder of homebase.ai, first brought me up to the concept of time arbitrage. Time is not something you can make more of. You have a finite amount of it every day. It's up to you how you use it, like whether you sleep, whether you – I wrote a book about finding balance between your personal, professional, and physical life. You got to – you. It's up to you to determine where you're using your effort. And, yeah. You know, so – and by the way, when you have peace of mind or just a greater sense of trust in some of that stuff, oh, man, the world opens up for you. You yeah. can actually see things differently. Yep. Because you're not sitting there worried about dumb shit you shouldn't be worried about that you can probably solve for a couple bucks a month.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, it's so fun like to do this exercise that we figured out works well with our customers. And I would encourage anybody to really calculate that if you can for your customers. And the way we do it is we say, how much time are you currently spending building reports every week or month? And that's your time. How much time of your whole team is it spending? And so sometimes you can get answers like 90 hours. We have, you know, we're trying to, you know, we're closing and we've closed people that are saying, you know, absurd amount of time. They're up to 2 a.m. in the morning building these reports. And then we say, okay, you know, if you had all this information automated and instead of spending 90 hours building a report, maybe you could spend 90 hours, if you want, analyzing your data and making better decisions. How much more revenue would you make? Okay, maybe you increase your revenue by 5%. I don't know. They can tell me, right? I'll put that onus on them. And so what's the swing of all the time you save and the additional revenue you generated? And then you, whatever our price is, hopefully our price is significantly less or lower than that ultimate swing. And then it's a no-brainer. So anytime you're selling to a company or another person, try to do those calculations if you can. And you know, make it really apparent on like, okay, you give me a dollar, but you're going to get five in return. do that all day.
Now, look, I've found that people grossly undervalue their own time. And I see so many people make, I could do that myself. I'm like, cool, because the replacement value is like next to nothing.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's like, that's important. So, you know, I love topics like this so much that we cruised right through this episode. So once again, with us today, Alex Cruz, CEO and founder of PenPath. Click the link, check them out. We end episodes of Startup Hustle with what we call the founder's freestyle. I'm going to give you an opportunity to share your past knowledge or even information from today to give a brief statement about what you've learned as a startup founder. And how could you, I don't know, what's something, and the first thing that comes to mind is usually right. So what kind of knowledge would you like to drop on the world, Alex?
Man, first of all, thanks for having me, Matt. The knowledge I'd like to drop, I'm just thinking about my own experience. And I would say that, you know, just don't give up if you're out there, if you're grinding. Don't ever give up, you know, give it all you have, because, you know, ultimately, that's what it's going to take. And so when it's lonely and you're the only one in that room at night, just remember that other people have gone through that exact phase. And, you know, if you keep at it, really good things will happen.
Well stated, sir. I'm going to focus mine a little. I'm going to make this a little more centric around today's topic and your product. So look, I have found that most people don't know shit about shit when it comes to selling. They think they do. And they think they know a lot about marketing. You can burn through a lot of money trying to give yourself an education that a product like PenPath will provide for you. And, you know, if you're early stage, that money matters. Now, there is nothing more validating than revenue. So use tools, stuff like that. We had a lot of great points today about like, hey, don't try to build it, buy it. And you know, certain things like that. If you're trying to raise capital, if you're trying to gain traction, you're trying to grow your business, give stuff like PenPath a try, because, you know, like, I mean, here's the thing is nothing, sales cures ails, man. Like sales, nothing happens in a business till something's sold. So whether you're a marketing manager or a founder or anyone, like, you know, I just really want to encourage you to automate anywhere and everywhere possible, because the cool stuff about things like PenPath, you only need to set it up and dial it in once. Mm-hmm. You get it right, now you can move on to the next thing and the next thing and the next thing. And you know, if it's not something that you are inherently passionate about doing yourself, offload it, man. Automate it, daisy chain it together, do whatever you need to do, because there's probably more important things that you can do with your time. With that, I'm going to end today's episode because I got to go sign up for PenPath and get my shit straightened out. I was mentioning earlier I had that data problem, but I get into it. So, man, thanks for joining me. And I'd like to follow up and see where you guys end up down the road, because I love talking about marketing.
Yeah, same, Matt. Thanks for having me, brother. It's a pleasure. Yep.
Startup Hustle is brought to you by Fullscale.io, helping you build a software team quickly and affordably. Make sure you reach down and hit that subscribe button, then come find us on Instagram. See you next time.